Live from Burbank, California, where robots have sex with men. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now he's sinking below $70 a barrel. Mark Maron.
I am sinking. Always sinking. Geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, pain sponges. And, of course, you need machines out there. How are you? Welcome aboard. It is Friday. That's Friday before Memorial Day weekend, a long weekend, which we are going to take. I hope you don't mind, Jim.
No. This is the first I heard of it.
Yeah.
Really, we're taking a long weekend?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and take a long weekend because apparently this place is closed on Monday. Laughing Andy said he'd hang out, but he said it in that way, sort of like, I got nothing to do, but if you guys, you know, want to do it, we should do it. Read, if you asses want to pull me out of my house on Monday, on a day where everybody else in the country gets to hang out with their friends, that's fine with me. Right? Was I misreading that, Andy? Or that's right on, yeah. So we're going to take that day off. It's Memorial Day, and I expect you to act appropriately.
Well, that's good. I can take some time off with my friend. I got a confession to make. Osama bin Laden has been sleeping on my couch.
In Highland Park?
No, Echo Park.
In Echo Park. You're in Echo Park. Oh, thank God. I thought he was in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
what kind of reaction was that? Hey, as long as he's not in my neighborhood. Man. Well, when is that? There's some sort of event that I think I'm going to go to with you and your lovely gal, Heather.
Oh, bowling.
We're going to go bowling.
For her birthday.
Don't you have to mention the bowling alley because I've got a guy who's mad at me and I don't know where he lives.
I don't remember the bowling alley right now.
When is that? That's a week from next week. Right?
Yeah.
It's a week. Tell her I'm going to go. I'll email her back. Look, we've got a great show today. We've got a packed show. We've got a lot of stuff on the show. We've got Gary Hart, former senator from Colorado and presidential candidate. We've got Ungayo Bilum, comedian famous for talking about pot constantly. We've got Jason Leopold, journalist who has aggravated a few on the left with his reporting, and we're going to talk to him about a lot of things. I think we should hit him with some news, too, because we got some stuff festering. He's got a new book called News Junkie. Vic Garbarini is a music critic who's been in the music game, was actually nominated for a Grammy for an interview, which I didn't even know you could do that. Did you know that this guy did a groundbreaking interview with Paul McCartney?
No.
The first time
no.
Paul McCartney got honest about the Beatles was with this guy.
Really?
And he was nominated for a Grammy for a music interview. Did you even know that they had that Grammy?
No.
That must be one of the 300 Grammys they do outside of the ceremony proper. Look, a lot of things, not a lot of things, but a couple of important things are happening. One, obviously, is George Bush's contrition, if you want to call it that, over mistake he may have made or mistakes he may have made in Iraq. This is the first. Everyone's jumping up and down. The right wing press is jumping up and down. You were appalled at Chris Matthews' reaction to this, among other statements. Can we hear that statement there, Laughing Andy?
Saying, "Bring it on."
This is his
kind
regret.
Of tough talk, you know, that sent the wrong signal to people. That I learned some lessons about expressing myself. Maybe in a little more sophisticated manner.
Really? When's that going to start? He sounded like a reprimanded child. It sounded like it took every amount of I don't even know if it was energy or what. There was it was a belligerent act of contrition.
It was not an act of contrition, in my opinion. He was staring at the ceiling. He was staring at the floor. He was staring anywhere except at somebody's face. It was an act of a child. Yeah, somebody being told, "You better say this. Because your poll number's down in the toilet."
And it's interesting when a narcissist, an infantile narcissist, which Bush is forced to say something that he doesn't want to say or is out of character or to take responsibility for anything emotionally is almost impossible for that kind of person.
Yeah, I was reading an old interview with one of his Harvard professors who, you know, came out against him in the last...
Oh, yeah, he used to be on Morning Sedition.
Yeah,
what's that guy's name? The Asian guy.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it.
Just saying that he would come out and say something, he'd be totally wrong about it, and then he'd lie in the next few sentences about, you know, what he said. Oh, I didn't say that.
Yeah. He was on our show. He said, "The great is F." You know, why can't I remember his name? Ah, man. He's great, that guy. No, but it was not really. If he's going to apologize, he ought to start apologizing for a lot of things. There's a bigger list than just saying, "Bring it on." I'll tell you that. Yeah, he's got a lot of apologizing to make, and I think we all know how long that list is. The other problem I'm finding, or that is very disturbing, is that there's this Marine Corps court-martial, a possible court-martial of up to about a dozen Marines for allegedly killing Iraqi civilians in cold blood. This stuff is bound to happen when you have a frustrating, you know, unjust insurgency that becomes confusing and daunting and relentless for guys like Marines who are under this much pressure. But what this shows, along with Abu Ghraib, which Bush, I don't think really took responsibility for, but Chris Matthews in what we were talking about before, were acting like he made some tremendous...
Bush just apologized for bad style.
Yeah,
I
think...
Not content.
Well, now, on top of Abu Ghraib and the pictures that come out of there, you have something similar, not in scope, but in action to Milai in the court-martial, the potential court-martial of these 15 Marines, for basically, you know, claiming that a rocket-propelled grenade killed these, what was initially, I think 15 Iraqi civilians, but it turned out to be about 25, and they claimed it was in a firefight. But as investigators with Time Magazine and then the Marines themselves basically found that these guys went in and just started shooting women and children in their homes who were cornered and frightening. So once this blows up, if and when it does, that is going to really put a face on this war, that it is completely similar to Vietnam and the type of pressure it puts on the guys in this situation. Obviously, I'm not letting them off the hook. They took this action, but this is going to put a whole new... you can always assume that this type of behavior is happening when you have people in this type of conflict, Marines and armed people in this type of conflict, but this is going to be the first time I think it's really going to be out there. And along with Abu Ghraib, where are the apologies for this? Where is the solution? Where is the promise of removing troops from the theater of battle? You know, also on the show today, speaking of this, we're going to have Jim Brown, who is a veteran from the Vietnam War. He's the former president of the San Diego chapter of Veterans for Peace. They're going to have an event out there outside of San Diego on Monday. He's going to tell us a little bit about that, maybe a little bit about what that organization is up to. So let's get on with it. We don't want you to be caught off guard or ill-informed today. We want you to be on point. So here's the first edition of Mark Maron Show's Short Order News. At a White House news conference with Tony Blair yesterday, President Bush admitted for the first time he made mistakes in the Iraq War. We just heard that. When asked what mistakes, Bush covered his ears and yelled, "La, la, 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 I can't hear you, la, 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 la." Bush was most sorry about Abu Ghraib scandal, which never would have happened if somebody hadn't released those photographs of it. A report released by the Union of Concerned Scientists in Berkeley found that the nation's 505,000 school buses are some of the oldest and dirtiest vehicles on the road. The level of soot inside the buses are so high, black kids who were bused into white schools turned out to be white. A new study found that one-third of the nation's youngest children live in homes where the TV is on most of the time. According to the study, girls from ages 7 to 12 tend to watch more primetime shows, while boys from ages 7 to 12 prefer those DVDs that daddy keeps in his closet that show naked people wrestling to bad music. And that's the Mark Maron Show Short Order News version 1. I believe that Jason Leopold, what? He's not coming at all? You don't know where he is? Well, what the hell is that about?
Jason Leopold has been kidnapped.
Jason Leopold, whose sources are questionable, is now questionable himself. So we'll be back in a second with something.
Now, he stole the strawberries. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Well, you know what? It turns out that apparently Jason Leopold, his book News Junkie, is an indication of his behavior today, that's for sure. He's definitely dope fiended us. Yeah, he's not coming. And his publicist gave some ridiculous excuse that brought up somebody canceled the interview from our show. On a network that, on a station that didn't exist with a person that doesn't work for us. Unbelievable. Just infuriating. You know, I spend time researching this stuff, and trying to, you know, put together an interview for a guy that you know, is a fairly controversial figure in terms of his credibility at this point. And now he's got none with me, I'll tell you that. What an ass. But I'm not going to fester about it because we have a very good show and we've got a great guest right now. And we're going to talk about some important things. Jim.
All right.
Veterans for Peace was actually founded in 1985. It is an organization that includes men and women, veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Gulf War, the Iraq-Afghanistan war that's going on now, and other conflicts. Veterans for Peace is an official non-governmental organization represented at the United Nations. With us on the phone today is Jim Brown. He was an infantry lieutenant in Vietnam. He was awarded a Purple Heart for his service in that war, and he is the former president of the San Diego chapter of Veterans for Peace. Welcome to the show, Jim Brown.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me aboard.
I'm very happy you're here. You know, it was interesting. I made a mistake earlier when I was writing down the intro, your intro, and I wrote down the name of the group as Veterans Against the War. But there is sort of a difference between, you know, coming out against the war and being a veteran for peace. Is there?
Yeah, there's a big difference. You know, I mean, all of us in our organization, we've all served our country as mm-hmm. veterans, you know, in the different branches of the service. And we've seen it all pretty much. And we think there's got to be a better way out there than just, you know, preemptively just jumping into, you know, different wars and, you know, sacrificing our young people. I think there's got to be a lot better ways to do it than what's going on right now.
Yeah, I got an interesting question for you, and maybe you can address it, because I was just talking about this in the last segment. We got a situation over there in Iraq now with this group of Marines, and it turns out it looks like there was some that was thought to be a rocket grenade propelled attack. It may have been. It's looking after the investigation that these Marines killed some civilians in cold blood. And I was talking about that in terms of the type of war that's going on there, a guerrilla war, an insurgency war that doesn't have a clear end in sight or a real mode of operations. And that kind of pressure, not unlike Vietnam, creates these kind of environments, doesn't it?
It does. I think if the war isn't organized, you know, where you have clear directives from the top mm-hmm. coming all the way down, and if you don't have, you know, clear change of command going on to keep an eye on things can really get out of hand like that.
It happens, you know, just quickly, right?
It happens real quickly, and if the troops are left out in the field too long, they don't have enough supervision, things can really go astray. I mean, it's you know, if you feel you know you're losing your men there, you forget some of the rules.
That's right, and you get angry.
You get angry, and things get out of hand. Look at like My Lai.
Yeah.
What happened there? And those troops are out in the field a long time without supervision.
Yeah, and I think a little of that's starting to happen. I think that this war is starting to obviously the numbers of dead are different, and the terrain is different. But in terms of hope for a pullout or hope for any closure, it doesn't seem much different to me. How about you?
You know, to me, it's a total mess over there. You know, and it's admittedly it's a mess. I mean,
yeah.
People coming back admit it's a mess. And they say,
are you getting guys in the organization from this war? Are they joining up with y'all?
They're starting to come in. You know, when you come home from combat and stuff, you know, you're not quite ready to go out and join some kind of organization or
mm-hmm.
something. Like, you just kind of want to go home and be glad you're home. You know?
Yeah, sure.
But they're starting to show up anyhow because there's a lot of frustration, you know, from the service going on over there.
Sure. Now, What does your organization do exactly on a day-to-day basis around the country?
Well, we try to bring out, you know, we try to bring out what is the cost of war to people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've
mm-hmm.
been in the war and we've done our stuff, but you know, when you go to war, you know, it's a tremendous sacrifice, you know, for everybody all concerned. The dollar cost is horrendous. The amount of people dying and wounding, getting wounded, and
yeah.
taking care of these people, you know,
mm-hmm.
throughout the rest of their lives and their family, it's a horrendous cost, and it's not something you go into preemptively or lightly, or you don't do it on a based on a bunch of infirm ground, you know.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
You know, you need to go in this with your eyes wide open, and evidently that wasn't the case here.
Yeah, and just the lack of concern for, it seems, the troops and this president's inability to really, you know, stand up and represent the troops and what they're going through is lacking. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you guys have going on down there near San Diego on Monday?
Okay, on Monday, what we like to do on Memorial Day, and we try to do it at least once a month, but especially on Memorial Day, you know, and on Veterans Day, we set up a project where we go to some public beach near the near Camp Pendleton or a public park, and we put up one cross out on a park, and we arrange it where it looks just like Arlington National Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And each cross has a name, rank, and you know, branch of service, and the date that they died of each one of the soldiers who have died in the invasion and the occupation over in Iraq.
Mm.
And I mean, this is supporting our troops. This is showing, hey, you know, we need to honor these people. We don't need to hide them and, you know, bring them home in caskets in the middle of the night. We need to honor these guys.
It's very powerful. You know, I went over to Camp Casey when Cindy Sheehan was over in Washington at that march, and just to see even the makeshift memorials, the temporary ones, just to see them all lined up and to realize that they represent a human life has a tremendous impact that I think certainly the media does not really acknowledge that or represent that in any way. And now we're looking at a total of 2,463 soldiers have been killed in Iraq.
Right. As of today, not to mention, you know, 17,000 plus wounded.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Unbelievable statistics. And we need to honor these guys, and what better way can we do that except go out and memorialize each and every one of them?
So it is a somber day. You know, a lot of people just see it as a three-day weekend, but it does have there is a reason that we have Memorial Day, and you're honoring that reason. I've got a link to the event on the website for the Mark Maron Show for people who want to maybe get down there. If you're in the Los Angeles area, you want to drive down. And thanks for all the work you're doing, Jim Brown. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us.
Okay. I want to bring it to your attention, to your listeners, too, that not only are we doing it in Fallbrook, but it's also happening in Santa Barbara. You can go down to Stearns Wharf over there.
Okay.
And then also in Santa Monica at the pier.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Right down here.
You can go to any of those places there, and it's the same thing. And man, we need some help. It's not easy to put those crosses out. And then you got to put stars out and their names and make it look nice. And nobody's giving speeches, and nobody's you know, talking about pro-war or anti-war. We're just there to honor these guys, and we need some help. So
okay, so now
have your people come on out.
Well, this will go on to, you know, they'll hear this on my show, and that's all at the site, at your site that I went to, the information about this stuff?
Yes, it is.
Well, thanks a lot, Jim Brown. I really appreciate what you're doing, and appreciate you spending the time with us.
Okay, likewise.
Okay, take care.
Right.
Bye-bye. We'll be back. You know, we're going to have Gary Hart in a few minutes. We're going to have Ngaio Bilum, the comedian, I think, is here. Jason Leopold, MIA. Dope fiended us. Stay around.
Now, Valerie Plame sent him on a junket. Mark Maron.
It was fun. It was a fun junket. There was gambling. All right, look, I'm not trying to imply that Jason Leopold is some sort of, you know, drug fiend. I'm just saying that, you know, he kind of screwed us here. I don't know whose fault it was.
You got to get over it, Mark. You know, it could have been an honest accident, an honest incident.
Don't you know what good radio it is, Jim? The less you get over something, the better it is to whine about it.
Trying to be combative about the guy, take a strong stand because you look like you've been hurt, but it's not the real thing, man. We don't know what really happened to Jason Leopold. He could be out there and
why are you adding to the myth of Jason Leopold?
Freeway bumper, you know?
No, it's not
it. He could be in a crash right now.
It's not
anything
it.
Could happen.
No, it's not it.
Hey, man, you don't know what happened.
I do.
No,
I
you
do.
Don't.
His publicist called up and said that someone called and canceled the interview.
Yeah, because somebody from KPOK.
Right, so what I'm saying is that means it's not a car accident.
KPOK.
It's not, whatever. It's not a car accident.
KPOK sounds like a real radio station, right?
Own what you said before.
KPOK?
It's not a car accident. The guy, you know, somebody screwed up, and it was on his side. That's all. It's done. Maybe maybe he's breaking a big story about Air America.
Maybe.
And their treatment of me. Look, let's just get to comedy. I'm not going to fight with you. It's Friday. We have reasons to be happy. We're taking Monday off. You wanted that, right?
I didn't want to take Monday off. It wasn't my idea. It was Jason Leopold's idea.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm not going to play games with you today, Jim. If you have something really bothering you, you want to get it out, what is it? What?
Well,
some people think this is cute. Other people think it's tedious. I'm in the latter group right now.
Well, I wish you'd be consistent at least.
Folks, let's do this. We got our friend Bruce sitting here. Let's indulge him. Folks, as you may know, we recently brought back the most requested segment of the show, fan favorite Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week. Each week, noted humorist Bruce Cherry presents a delightfully insightful proposal for a recurring bit. Now, please welcome back Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
Big news, Mark.
Yes.
I've decided to bring back one of my prior triumphs, a bit I pitched last fall.
Hold on a second. Wait a minute. Con queso, por favor. Semper Fi, Julio. I can't allow this.
What? I'm so reasonable.
But I'm not. Okay, buddy? Allowing a second installment of a bit violates the spirit of Pitch of the Week, my friend.
And that is?
Which is to force you to come up with a brand new stroke of genius every time. And it allows me to exercise the arbitrary power that feeds my egomania. This is ridiculous. I can't very well debate you when the entire exchange has been scripted in advance by you.
What, this isn't scripted.
Yes, it is. Even this part is scripted. No doubt an attempt to make it seem non-scripted.
Mark, I believe the term is unscripted.
I know that. I was just reading what you wrote. You're driving me crazy with your superior intellect. Oh, for Christ's sake. Wait.
Mark, I assure you, you're free to say whatever you want.
Bruce, I would be delighted if you would repeat a bit. Oh, and I just pooped my pants.
Don't worry, Mark. We'll edit that out in post. Uh-huh. But I'm glad you've agreed to the reprise of a bit. And this is one of the best. Remember, it's a phone conversation with a king of Wessex from the year 750. His name is Cedric the Ineffectual. If you recall, Cedric was a thinly veiled metaphor for George Bush. Now, let's go to script, okay?
Let me repeat. I poop myself.
Script, please, Mark.
Oh. Our leader is an idiot. Sadly, 'twas always thus. Now it's time for our weekly phone call to the year 750 and the King of Wessex, Cedric the Ineffectual. Let me just dial the Histriophone. Oh, you idiot. It's been 6 months, Bruce. Haven't you come up with a better name than Histriophone?
Hey, just read the script, okay? You got a very important line here. Clears up the problem of why somebody in the year 750 would pick up the phone. Everything is taken care of.
Yeah, luckily, this is a speakerphone. Hello, mm-hmm. Cedric. Pick up. Pick up the object that looks like the jawbone of a stag.
You mean the history of phone? I love that name. But what's a phone?
Cedric, this is Mark Maron from the future.
The future? Well, don't tell me how Beowulf ends.
Beowulf? Is that even written down yet?
Written? What's that? I was listening to it on my bard. I paused him halfway through.
You paused your bard? How do you do that?
I hit him with a piece of firewood.
Cedric, if you recall, you function as a commentary on our own society. Last time we spoke, you had been attacked by Vikings, so you invaded the unrelated kingdom of Northumbria.
Yes. We got bogged down. Didn't reckon on that stupid bog. Now insurgents are attacking our soldiers with improvised weapons, like oxcart bombs, horse bombs, and ass bombs.
Ass bombs? You mean exploding donkeys?
I wish! it's gold! I'm sorry,
here we go, here we go. Cedric, we're having a big debate here about immigration.
Immigration? Uh-huh. Don't get me started. We're having a terrible problem here. The Saxons are coming and taking all of our jobs.
Wait, I thought the Saxons were burning villages and raping women.
Yes, those are jobs. What the hell is your economy based on?
Well, have you come up with a solution to the immigration problem?
Yes, two words. Guest villages. Brilliant, right?
He first was slain, girded warrior. Grendel on him turned murderous.
What's that, Cedric? It sounds like someone reciting Beowulf.
Oh, it looks like I have to pause my bard again. Look, I've got to go. I feel an ass bomb coming on. And that is the closer, ass bomb. Uh-huh. What do you think?
It says here I poop my pants.
I'll take that as a yes. See you next time with Cedric the Ineffectual. Now go clean yourself up, okay, Mark? You got to admit, that one rocked.
All right.
It's good. It's a good. It's a go. We're going with Cedric the Ineffectual, unless I find another one I want to repeat.
Okay, buddy. All right. I'll think about it. And that's just great. All right. That Bruce Cherry's pitch of the week. Perfect. All right. Well, there you have that. He's such a warm, friendly guy. You know, seeing Bruce and engaging with Bruce as we sat here dissipated all that tension you and I had. There doesn't need to be any tension between you and I. We're on the same team. I am not upset. I let go of the Jason Leopold thing. I was upset initially. You want to know why initially I was upset? I wanted to talk to the guy. Well, the guy did some great, great reporting around Enron. I've read his stuff on Truth Out. I was disappointed, and I shouldn't have lashed out in anger like that. Okay?
I think we still have a chance of talking to him, though, if he ever wants to come back on the show.
Okay. All right. Maybe that'll happen. You say if I behave myself.
I was saying, you know, maybe if you hold some of your preconceptions in until you know the full story about why he wasn't here today. Maybe, you know, we'll have a nice time. We'll learn something. We'll get to ask questions we want of Jason Leopold and the Rove thing.
Are you saying that it might be Charlie's fault or the guy who books the show?
No, I think Leopold screwed up or somewhere on his side screwed up somewhere.
You think it's Charlie, don't you? Charlie's right out there. Is he out there? No. Okay. Maybe it's Charlie's fault. I don't know. It's certainly not. Can't blame this one on Sleepy Bill Kohler.
Andy.
Or Laughing Andy. No, Andy just screws up discs and stuff. He doesn't do
Andy the Clown.
He just screws up sound stuff and causes the trouble that Bill takes the hit for. No, it did. Andy's in the best position in the world. He's like, I don't know. Is this a radio show or what? I just work at a sound place. All right, look. You all right, buddy? We okay, Andy? You all right? What does he care? He's just happy I'm talking about it so he can play it for his wife later.
So what are you doing? What are you doing this weekend?
No, we're not doing that now.
No, but what are you doing this week?
I'm working. I have a lot of work to do. I have reading to do. I'm enjoying P.J. Norton's book, Saving General Washington. I recommend it highly. Because I really, my knowledge of politics as far as in depth is really at a 101 level in a lot of ways. I'll admit that. And in terms of capturing the Founding Fathers and putting them into context, it's a great book. Really enjoying it. I do want to play this, though. You know, Bin Laden was on television. He released a tape. And usually around this time, we get a dispatch from the Al-Qaeda news guys. So we got one yesterday. So here's the Al-Qaeda news.
From across the nation, around the world, and under a burqa, this is Al-Qaeda News with hosts Muhammad and Mahmoud.
I am Muhammad.
I am Mahmoud.
Today we have a big, big news story.
Yes, very big.
I said that.
So you said it. So what? I can say it too? It's so big we both can say it.
Enough! Enough! Our leader and the holiest of holy men, Osama bin Laden, has released another audio tape.
Yes, yes. With the message that the streets of America will fill with blood. The screams of the infidels will be heard around the world.
Wait, what are you talking about? That was a couple of tapes ago. You don't keep up.
No, you are wrong.
I am not wrong. You are wrong. What do you know? But that's not the point. The point is we have our own tape that we made with Osama.
Yes, I don't know why he didn't release it.
It was a great tape. Just the three of us.
Listen to this and tell me this is not a great tape. It is an honor to have you in our studio, our holy leader, Bin Laden. Let me just fix your microphone.
Don't touch it. You'll just screw it up. You're always fiddling with things, idiot.
Don't call me an idiot in front of the holy Osama. You're an idiot.
Oh, you think I'm an idiot?
No, you're an idiot. All right, don't tell me.
Well, you don't shut up. You're annoying. I am trying to scare America here.
See, you're annoying Osama.
You're the one he looked at when he said it.
Oh, no, you're the one he looked at.
What are you looking at? You have no idea what you're talking about.
You're an idiot.
Wait a minute. You're both annoying me. I should have made you hijackers 20 and 21. You're giving me a headache.
See, that's a great tape. And you can hear more about it in his special offer. Our kidnapped victim and spokesmodel, Tina, will tell you all about it.
I don't think we should let Tina talk. I think she's trying to escape.
She wouldn't try to escape. She's in love with me.
In love with you? Oh, you are so pathetic. That's what you are.
Pathetic? What are you talking about?
Look at you.
Look at me.
Hi, it's Tina from Al-Qaeda News with an offer you won't be able to resist. It's the Osama bin Laden box set of threatening messages. All the classics in one convenient set.
What do you call fat?
I call that, look at you. Have you seen yourself?
You don't have to be a member of Al-Qaeda to enjoy it. Just send $50 to Afghanistan. Latitude 32.2730 degrees north by longitude 63.89 degrees east. An unmarked White House with a big antenna on the top.
Okay. Thank you, Tina. I am Mahmoud.
And I am Orhan. And remember,
Our news is bad news.
For you!
Wow, it's always enlightening to it's interesting with technology today that these guys can go ahead and make their own damn newscasts.
Man, those guys sound like buffoons.
Well, really?
Yeah.
You think so, Jim?
Yeah, they just sound incompetent and buffoonerish.
Man, you are you're sharp. You know, you pick up on things.
You know?
You mean, wide up. Oh, man. Hey, it's Friday. We can be funny. Join me. And KTLK for a night of entertainment. Laughing Liberally is going to be June 3rd at the Wadsworth Theater in Westwood. You can go to KTLK.com, get information on that if you're in the area. It's going to be me and Rick Overton, Will Durst, Jim David, Dean Obadala, Katie Halper. Good times. We're going to have a lot of those people on the show to plug this show. Look, Ken Lay, what do I want to talk about? I think it is truly amazing that these corporate criminals, these morons that thought they could bilk people out of 60, they destroyed the stock market. They bilked people out of their pensions, out of their lives. Thousands of people lost their jobs. And this guy, Ken Lay, is surprised that he got sentenced as harshly as he did. He should be in China. They would have shot him in public. They would have shot him in public in disgrace. I was listening to David Sirota the other day on Schultz's show, and he doesn't seem to think that this is any indication that the culture of prosecuting these guys is going to change. We don't know what the sentence is going to be on this, and what's really going to happen. Is this going to stop? Is this going to be like a death sentence, or is this going to be like a supposed death penalty for corporations? Are they going to learn from this? No, they're just going to become more clever in how they screw people.
No, Lay's not going to get more than 20 years. For these type of
I hope
crime.
The hell he gets 20 years. That would be, I think that would be...
Skilling's going to get much more, but, you know, they won't get anywhere near what they should be getting, obviously.
What do you think they should get, Jim?
I think, Trapper John.
Yeah.
One of the actors from MASH was talking about what he thinks...
McIntyre?
No. The guy who replaced... Trapper. No, the guy who replaced...
We're so bad at this. We're on radio. There's an internet sitting right in front of us, and we're sitting here wondering what the hell a name is. It's ridiculous. The fact that we couldn't remember the name of that professor of Bush's at Harvard, that was...
Let me tell you something. Who was the guy who freed the slaves?
When I had Pashman, McDonald, and the whole damn crew of guys thinking for me, it was different.
They were
Larson
eating donuts and laughing behind your back.
Man, look at these guys in there now. What are they doing? What the hell's Laughing Andy doing? Charlie's looking for work on the internet. All right, look.
I think they should be run through the streets of America in the nude.
But the payoff should they get it gets cut off at the end, huh? Yeah, that's it. We'll be back with your thing, the war on brains.
Now, shots were fired in his basement. Mark Maron.
All right, let's clear this up. Yoshi Tsurumi is the name of Bush's old business school professor who we've interviewed twice. And Mike Farrell is a guy from Trapper John. Yeah. Done deal. Every week, folks, we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 6-year global war. It's not every week now, though. It's when we feel like it. We bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 6-year global... You know, Gary Hart's going to be on any minute now. We bring you... The global straight, every 6-year war being waged. But hey, every so often we bring you the latest news from the front lines of the 6-year global war being waged by the Bush administration. Here with today's dispatch from the War on Brains is war correspondent Mort Milthington.
Dateline, Cambridge, Massachusetts, home to Harvard College and the George W. Bush Museum of Commemorative Beer Bongs. The War on Brains continues. You doughy-faced products of trade schools and cheese-based diets. For while you are lumping behinds, we're busy indelibly marking your overstrained pleather couches. The man with the lowest brow in this nation's highest office has been busy gassing more American children than Captain Kangaroo after a breakfast at Chili's. For according to the Union of Concerned Scientists, or UCS, America's aging fleet of 505,000 school buses are the dirtiest things this country has put on the road since the DMV gave Courtney Love a driver's license. Their study shows these 30-year-old death traps can produce 10 times more diesel soot than a big rig, with half the likelihood of getting a Hummer at the Stuckey's.
Oh, yay, Stuckey's!
Yeah. Mark, doesn't it rattle you that every morning your two boys, Froggy and Ratface, are probably riding in the very same bus in which your friends played keep away with your Ritalin?
Yeah.
I remember my first school bus. Back then, the coots would pray for a diesel cloud just to mask the horrible specter of Mike Radlovich's fear pee. But I guess that's what I get for pulling a knife on him for his fruit cup. Mark, recent studies have found that brain-damaging diesel soot can concentrate inside school buses. Shut up, Mom! I'm in the TV room! Leading to increased risk of bronchial problems and even serious behavioral disorders. Leave me alone! I'll take the trash out when I feel like it! Gilligan's on! Screw college, man! I'm gonna be in a band! Now, I understand, Mark.
Yeah.
Now I really understand. It hit me like a diamond bullet shot through my forehead into my hypothalamus and then into my pleasure center. Those short yellow buses aren't for retarded kids. They're for making kids retarded. Why does this blatant assault on the health of and welfare of America's future scholars continue under our education president? Probably because he's not our education president. That our president would risk the lives of millions of helpless school children because he's too cheap to buy new buses? Shameful. Then America and Americans would sit back and let it happen year after year? Ignominious. That my mom said I wasn't good enough to be in a band? Totally bogus. But now there's something even more important to think about, America. America, we simply must not let diesel-based cancer rob our children of their chance to grow up and die from diabetes and AIDS. And that's today's dispatch from
The War on Brains.
Hey, 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 Gary Hart. Senator Gary Hart is going to be on the phone with us momentarily to talk about his new book. Like the new music. That was nice. That music sounds good. That's not new, but some of the stuff before that. Gary's new book is called The Shield and the Cloak. Stay with us.
Now, in a world, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome.
As most of you know, Gary Hart was the senator from Colorado from 1975 to 1987. He was a presidential candidate in 1984 and in 1988. He is the author of 15 books about topics ranging from James Monroe to his latest, The Shield and the Cloak, which is about a new national security plan. Welcome to the show, Senator Hart.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. Actually, it's 16 books. I wrote another one last night.
Oh, congratulations. You just got bored and just finished it up? Listen, I got to ask you a couple questions. Before we talk about national security, we talk a lot on this show about the Democrats, the strategy, the lack of spine of a lot of the Democrats. Now, how do you think we're looking heading into the midterms in terms of Democratic strategy and what they should be saying that they're not?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's a book I wrote last night.
Oh, good. Thank God.
It's out in September. It's called The Courage of Our Convictions, and it is, in fact, on that very topic. The first part of the book criticizes many of the current Democratic leaders for not clearly defining the differences between the two parties.
Let's name names. Let's name names.
Using Iraq as a principal example, but other things as well. And then the second half of the book lays out what I call a manifesto of core principles that make us different from Republicans.
Well, Senator Hart, I would really appreciate it if you could tell me who these primary transgressors are of the Democratic values that we do have, and just so everybody knows, you know, what those core principles should be around. There's this idea that there's a middle that they should play to, and it's mythical.
Well, I think it is mythical. It worked very well for Bill Clinton. I single out, particularly on the Iraq War, Senator Clinton, Senator Biden, Senator Lieberman, and 20-some other Democrats in the Senate who voted for the war resolution. Many of those now, John Kerry, John Edwards, and others, have said their vote was wrong and they regret it and they were misled by the president. And I'm hoping other Democrats will say the same thing. The core principles, in my judgment, come from the four great Democratic presidents of the 20th century. Franklin Roosevelt, who said we are a national community based on social justice. Harry Truman, who said our security rests on our alliances with other democratic nations. John Kennedy, who resurrected the ancient ideal of the republic by saying citizens should have duties to their country. And then finally, Lyndon Johnson, who, of course, championed equality and justice.
Well, that sounds great. I'm certainly looking forward to that book, and I'm glad you shared that stuff with us. And now, moving into the subject that you deal with in the new book in terms of national security, I've been reading a bit about the Founding Fathers lately, and I just find it interesting. At James Madison, there's a couple of quotes that he said. One was, no nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. And he also said, if tyranny and oppression come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy. And it seems to me that in the name of national security, there is a faction within this government that has hijacked the democratic principles we stand for. Now, how do we design a national security plan that still honors those principles of democracy that will guarantee our rights and freedoms?
I think, first of all, by recognizing the changing nature of conflict, war in the 21st century will not look like 20th century warfare. It will look like Black Hawk Down and Fallujah, that is house-to-house, door-to-door, hand-to-hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's very primitive. But what it means is the forces of the future are going to look a lot more like the Delta Force and the Rangers and the SEALs than they are the 101st Airborne and 82nd Airborne and 1st Marine Division.
Understood.
And we've got to be lighter, faster, quicker. And I advocate in this book, The Shield and the Cloak, that the services create, we create a fifth service called Special Forces and unite the Delta Force, the Rangers, SEALs, and the Air Force Special Units and some parts of the Marine Corps into this fifth service to fight this new low-intensity urban conflict.
Okay, so that's, you know, on the ground, you need a quick, agile force that can deal with a guerrilla-type or insurgent-type outbreaks. But in terms of, you know, sort of broader terrorist events and also, you know, investigating potential terrorist events, you know, how do we structure that in a way that that doesn't deny us what we've grown to love about our country?
Several ways. First of all, we must reconstruct the alliances with Europeans and Asians, which helped us win two world wars and the Cold Wars for this simple reason. We need their security services and we need their police forces and their special forces. This is, you know, if you look at all the number of terrorist attacks worldwide and the number of deaths from terrorism, we're well down the list. We're in the top 10. But we're not first, second, or third. Other nations, including Indonesia and other nations, are suffering much more from terrorism than we are. We tend to think this is all American-centric, but it is not. So we need alliances. They need our help, and we need their help. So we can't thumb our nose at our traditional allies the way this administration has done. Second, we need to train and equip the National Guard and bring it home from Iraq as the backbone of our homeland security. Both the U.S. Commission on National Security for the 21st Century, which I co-chaired, and the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force study a year after 9/11, which I also co-chaired, both said that the National Guard was the backbone of our domestic security, and 40% of our forces in Iraq today are National Guard and Reserve.
Well, that sounds encouraging to me. And you know, when I look at this administration, you're a student of history, you're a brilliant politician. There is a way, if we do our civic duty and people awaken to the information that is out there about the truth of what is happening in this country, that we can reclaim some of this ground that these guys have taken over, can't we? I mean,
we have no choice. We're going to have to. And I think the country is coming to that conclusion that we can't go it alone, that we won't be secure by unilateral invasions, that long-term insurgencies unpredicted in foreign countries are going to bleed our standing forces dry and deplete our homeland security forces, which is exactly what's happening, besides which costing us a lot of money not going into education and energy security and other things. So, we have no choice. We've got to address the new world of the 21st century instead of trying to find a new Cold War to fight.
Yeah, and by that's exactly what it is, isn't it? That they have sort of taken this stance that would almost like they're tempting the Muslim countries to unify into a collective front that they could identify clearly and stand up against for the rest of time.
I think anybody governing a democracy knows it's much easier to unite people against something than it is for something, and as you appropriately quoted Madison, the founders knew this, and that's why they urged us not to get involved in what they called foreign entanglements. As you know, John Quincy Adams, then Secretary of State and future president, said in 1823, "We go not abroad seeking demons to destroy," and we certainly shouldn't become an empire, and the actions taken in the Middle East today are structured to make America a dominant empire in the region. But the insurgency is denying us that opportunity.
Now, I'm not alone in having some concern about renegade nuclear material, about the ports, and about that type of about our borders in terms of specifically weaponry. How do you approach that?
Proliferation of weapons of mass destruction is one of the several leading problems that we and friendly nations are going to face in this century and are facing. This is true not just in Iran, but in North Korea. I think oddly enough, I must compliment the current administration because they're finally doing what they should have done in Iraq, and that is put our allies forward. We're using in Asia, we're using China, Japan, the Russians, and others to counter North Korea, so that we don't, it just does not become a face-off between the U.S. and North Korea. And in Iran, we are letting our European allies take the lead, which is exactly what we ought to do. So it's making it more and more difficult for the Iranian leadership to say this is the U.S. empire coming to get us, because it is a coalition of Western nations.
Well, Senator Gary Hart, do you have a couple minutes more to stay with us over a break and maybe address some of the current issues that are happening, like immigration and a couple of other things?
Sure, very briefly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you in just a second.
Okay.
Now, use as directed, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. We are on the phone and continuing our conversation with Senator Gary Hart. His new book is The Shield and Cloak. It is about a new national security plan for this country. If you would, Senator Hart, just briefly tell me some of your thoughts about the way the immigration issue is unfolding and how it's being used by the GOP and politicized, and what you think might be the right thing to do with that issue.
Well, to be... to prove my nonpartisanship, again, I have to say that I think President Bush is on the right track. Mm-hmm. This is a bitterly divisive issue. It is here in Colorado as it is in California and elsewhere. I don't think we're going to solve this problem by exporting 12 million people or putting 3 or 4 million of them in jail. We'd be building jails for the next 20 years if we try to prosecute everybody who's here illegally. We've got to face up to the fact we're a hypocritical nation. We want cheap McDonald's hamburgers and cheap Walmart goods. And part of the reason those goods are cheap is because a lot of the people in the back room doing the dirty work are immigrant labor, mm-hmm. some legal, some illegal. I know here in this state, despite the fact we have a law against employing illegals, that a lot of the roofing jobs and home repair jobs and others in my neighborhood and elsewhere are being done by contractors who are employing hardworking Mexican illegal laborers. And the people who get a cut rate on their roofing job are not objecting, but they're also the same people who are saying, we've got to build an 800-mile wall on our border and keep those immigrants out.
Right.
So I think everybody's got to be a little more candid and straightforward and honest about it. Fact of the matter is, corporate America wants these cheap laborers, and they ought to stand up and be heard. What I want to, I want some of the major employers of inexpensive labor to stand up and say, the president's right, and this is the path we ought to follow. And you don't hear a peep out of any of them.
And also, is there any reason to perhaps reassess some of the trade agreements we have with Mexico and also maybe penalize some of these corporations if they don't treat these immigrant workers with respect on a wage level so the wage isn't pushed down?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, if you want to end the immigration problem, you'd raise the minimum wage in this country and require everybody to pay it, including Walmart and McDonald's and everybody else, and from $5 or $6, whatever it is, up to a decent living wage. The point is, in this country, you can work. People say, well, the unemployed people don't want to work. Well, so you work 40 hours a week at the minimum wage, and you're still below the poverty line. What's the incentive?
Exactly.
What's the incentive?
Exactly. Gary Hart, pleasure talking to you. Really informative.
My pleasure.
And best of luck with the book, and looking forward to the new one. I got to get through the other 15, but I'll try to do it.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator
Hart.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye. The book is The Shield and the Cloak. It's out now. And he's a real whiz with history and with political analysis. And that was a treat. This turned out to be a pretty decent Friday after all, Jim.
Yeah, I know.
Despite everything else.
Yeah.
Despite Jason Leopold not showing up, because perhaps he might have some real problems. In a couple of minutes, but I'm talking about in terms of getting here. And we're going to get to the bottom of that, right, Charlie? Okay. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to Vic Garbarini about music, right? We're going to get him on the phone. He's going to be cool. This dude's been a music guy for forever. Right now, in studio, he's... And Guy is going to hang out for that, too. You're in for the long haul.
What else do I got to do?
Exactly. Also known as the Chocolate Mountain of Love,
of
Ungayo. Chocolate Mountain of Joy. Hold on. Scratch that, man.
Of Joy.
I'm sorry. I didn't listen to your
Chocolate
CD.
Mountain of Love is my porno name.
Oh, okay. Also known as the Chocolate Mountain of Joy. That's so funny. It's like, hey, dude, come on. Not love. Joy. Ungayo Bilum is originally from the Bay Area, and every comic who has come through the Bay Area that smokes pot has smoked it in Ungayo's living room. Welcome to the show.
Or car.
Yeah, or car.
Or right outside the club.
Are you living here now?
I'm living in L.A. I've been here for like 4 or 5 years.
Really?
So the career's working out. What town are you in? How about you moved to Illinois?
I was in New York, and then I came back, and I didn't know. My wife did a show with you. She says to say hi.
We just did the High Times Comedy Festival.
You are the High Times Comedy Festival, aren't
the
you?
The walking High Times Comedy Festival. It's I smell like sweat and weed.
Yeah. It was funny to go by because you guys did a show last night at the Improv, and I did the show after you. And it's just the audience. And who's that dude? Who's that other comic that looks like a classic hippie dude
with the Jeff long Peterson
hair. yeah he's something. So what,
yeah,
do you call yourself a pot activist?
I've been a pot activist for a long time now. Very active with Americans for Safe Access.
So there's a difference between a pot activist and a guy who just smokes pot and says, dude, we should be able to smoke pot.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny because pot smokers have motivational issues sometimes. You know, time management.
I'm going to do it, man.
Yeah, so being a proactive pot smoker is kind of oxymoronic, and yet embrace your dichotomies what I've always thought. So, I go to rallies. I organize in the community. We put together, we do shows and benefits and things like that, for sure.
Now, how are they attended? I know that the shows up in San Francisco are well attended, right?
Well attended, very crowded. Sold out pretty much every show when we did the High Times Comedy Festival there. Bringing it back next year, as a matter of fact.
And what is the objective of pot activism in terms of medical marijuana and freeing the weed, man? We're going to free the weed?
Well, first of all, it's a plant.
Yeah.
You know, so
sure,
it's
sure.
kind of ridiculous to prohibit something that grows naturally.
Absolutely.
Definitely, the goal of Americans for Safe Access right now is to have medical marijuana laws on the books in all 50 states by 2010, which is not that far off.
No.
And the goal, of course, of me and most of my friends is just... let grown-ups be grown-ups.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to something like this. And that's actually how they pitched it in Denver, is how they, the Safer Alliance, they just won an election where, as an adult, you can carry up to an ounce of weed.
Mm-hmm.
Or marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Reefer. Mary Jane.
Viper.
Yeah?
Yeah, sure, man. I'm viperish. I know some cats.
There's more names for it now than I ever imagined.
You can make up words as long as you use the right verb.
Yeah.
Twist up a scuff diffler.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
People, if you're that group of friends that you have, will know exactly what you mean.
I keep mine in the thing right under the thing.
Yeah. Give me the thing so I can get this thing
Flick
going.
Watson, the needle.
Yeah.
Oh. Ooh, wrong drug. But their big pitch, big pitch in the Safer Alliance was, who would you rather hang out with? Would you rather hang out with a bunch of drunk people, or would you rather have some stoners at your party? And that was kind of like their whole thing. You know, some people don't like to drink, and yet they still like to have a little mind alteration when they're out on a Friday night. Why can't you smoke a joint before you go to the show?
Is there anyone?
Ask cops. They'll tell you. Cops would much rather work a reggae show than Megadeth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The chances for problems are less.
The neck factor is much lower.
That's right. Jim, you okay with this?
I'm just not going to hop on the bandwagon until you go for legalization of poppies as well.
Like opium poppies and whatnot?
All poppies are opium poppies.
All marijuana use is medicinal.
I wonder where that breakoff is to where it's not actually, you can't say it comes from nature. Like speed, doesn't come from nature.
No, speed comes from
cleaning
bikers.
Products. Yeah. Which are completely unnatural.
Morphine.
don't dump on the bikers. The bikers, they helped us out at the place.
I spoke to bikers.
We'll be back. We'll be back with Ngaio Bilom and Vic Garbarini.
Pick a lane, jerk. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. In studio, Ngaio Bilom, the chocolate mountain of joy.
I prefer love myself.
Not high.
Do you prefer chocolate love?
Are you high now? Yeah. Are we high?
Well, who knows, man? It's me. Most likely. How do I know? I don't know.
It's hard to know anymore.
I sweat hash oil.
That's nice. Can you sell that? Do you just have someone come up and go, scrape my skin,
I get scraped by hippies anytime I go back to see. Put the butter knife down and let me walk down the street.
You can run a car on hash oil.
He's not really black. That's resin. All right.
Lick him.
Jim.
Not you.
You high?
Me, no.
Okay. I'm not high either. Let's introduce our guest. Our next guest has been writing about music for years. He was the creator and editor of the Old Musician magazine. He was nominated for a Grammy for his interview with Paul McCartney. He's written for Rolling Stone, GQ, Spin, Mojo. He was a music columnist at Playboy for 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah, he's currently working on a couple of books. He's the American editor for Classic Rock magazine in the UK. And the reason he's on our show is to talk about the resurgence of the protest album, if it is indeed that. Welcome to the show, Vic Garbarini.
Great to be here.
So, look, before we get to the meat of this, how does one get nominated for an interview for a Grammy?
That was as much a surprise to me as to anybody else. What happened was, I guess we had just started Musician Magazine, and in the first 6 months it just kind of exploded and took off, and Columbia Records said to me, would you like to interview Paul McCartney?
Yeah.
Having grown up on the Beatles, I'm going, no, I'd rather not. Yes, so I went over, I interviewed him, and Columbia executives called me into their office. Make a long story short, I thought I'd done something wrong, because they kept telling me, do not ask him about the Beatles. He will not talk about the Beatles. This kind of rolled off my back a little bit, and I kind of, you know how it is as an interviewer, I kind of entered sideways and said, well, you seem to be at your best when you're kind of thrown off kilter here. And I would imagine, you know, and after a few minutes, we got into the Beatles, and he wouldn't stop for an hour and a half. I just kept praying the tape recorder was getting it all. So the Columbia people were like ecstatic. They wanted to put it out, give it to people like you.
Yeah, sure.
One of those interview type things, which is not eligible for a Grammy. But what happened was there was so much demand for it that they just decided to print up 60,000 of them. I don't know where they got the figure, just to see what would happen. Well, they sold out in 1 week. And
there you go.
And I felt like a real musician because I got ripped off by the record company. And in a nutshell, once they were sold like that, they qualified under the auspices of Best Spoken Word Album.
Okay.
And the next thing I knew, I was sort of, you know, given a call and informed that me and Paul McCartney were up for a Grammy together.
Oh, that's exciting, man. That's a good story. So, look, Vic, we used to get into this because we pulled sound on this stuff. There are albums out now by Pearl Jam, Neil Young, the Dixie Chicks, Bruce Springsteen that have protest and anti-war themes. Now, this type of music hasn't been dead, but it hasn't been in the forefront, and it's interesting that a couple of the cats that are doing it are like Neil Young did one of the greatest protest songs ever, which was Ohio, right?
Sure. He still says that is the best thing he ever did with Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Yeah.
And he's right. And
that's better than Our House?
That's a Graham Nash song about living with Joni Mitchell, but
let's just go down the list because I think I'd like to hear your assessment of each, and we've got sound on them. In my mind, the Dixie Chicks, in some ways, is the most interesting culturally because I think they are really trying to become sophisticated. On top of Say Something, it's almost like watching someone graduate, and I don't know if it's a real statement album or a career reinvention. But we got a piece of it. Let's hear it, Bill. And they're paying the price for this, Vic.
Sold out shows all over, yeah.
On the radio.
I would have to say, somewhat deference to your governor, that I feel like a bit of a girly man here because this is the first record that has actually brought me to tears in about 6 or 7 years. I live in the South.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you from Nashville, Tennessee. And what they have done, and you hit it right on the head, Mark, they have made a cultural statement. They have made a personal statement that is not about just about resentment. It's not a dark record or even a bitter record.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, in that song we're playing, some of the first lines of the record are, to forgive, yeah, I can deal with that, but to forget, no. Because what all these women did were basically get up on stage and the lead singer, Natalie, basically said, I'm ashamed that President Bush comes from Texas, which
yeah.
is where they came from in England. And basically, it was just the biggest row I've seen in Nashville since I've been here.
Since the Beatles were bigger than God?
That's exactly what it is. Southern culture, as James Baldwin said, this is another country down here.
Yeah.
I have lived in various places in the world, England, Canada, besides the Middle East, elsewhere. But, I mean, the South is more different from California or the North than it is than they are from England or Canada. This
sure.
is a very repressive culture
when
it comes to speaking your own mind.
Right.
Particularly if you're a woman.
Right.
And I know a lot of women who have become stars here in Nashville, as somebody said, it's a big high school, who are the most creative, interesting people, and when they got their record contracts, it's like they were sort of dressed up almost as cartoon figures and had to go out and do the usual thing.
All right.
Also, country radio is completely dominant down here. It
yeah.
is... It's kind of like it was in rock and roll 25 years ago, and country radio has just said no to this record. The thing about the record is it is a magnificent piece of work. They work with Rick Rubin, the
All
guy
right.
who resurrected Johnny Cash, who's
yeah.
got the number one album with...
Yeah, he did all the Cash stuff, and he did. Who else did he do?
Beastie Boys.
Yeah, Beastie Boys. He just did a Neil Diamond record. All right, so you like that one. We understand where you're coming from with that. I agree with you. Now I got to go out because I want to cry. Let's move on to... I do. I'm just like you. I do. I'll start squirting him out at anything. So Neil Young, as we said, is a vocalist on Ohio, and it seems to me that in order for these type of songs to have an impact, because his is a more anti-war record, the culture has to be geared and ready for the message, and I think that might be happening a bit. Let's hear a bit of this Neil Young thing before you tell us what you think.
Yeah.
He's Canadian.
Yeah, but he knows. Maybe it makes him a little more objective to be standing on top of us and looking down.
Smokes a lot of pot and guile.
Well, I think I've spoken with Neil.
All right, well, Vic Garbarini, obviously I don't know if Neil's at the top of his musical game on this record, but the intent is there.
The intent is there, and actually the music grows on you because the chord changes and whatnot are, he's not just knocking out two or three chords. He's playing very simply. He's just got a kind of overdriven Les Paul and a great drummer. But the thing about Neil is he is just like a laser. He will come straight at you with whatever he's got. And there are times, like in the Greendale thing he did a couple years ago, where he had a stage show and he talked about Grandpa doing this and Grandpa would do this on the stage.
Right.
And you're going, okay, Neil, what is this?
You know? What are you doing?
On the other hand, here, he is taking, it's almost like a shaman. He is taking everything that has kind of ripped your own soul apart about the lies connected with this war, the lies connected with the administration, and he's kind of downloads it directly into your soul. I mean,
That's quite a trick. Well, now I got to listen to it. I like the idea that he used 100 voices as to create a sound of populism.
What's that called? A choir?
But 100 people. That's a big.
So a big choir.
That's big. All right. So let's move on to Pearl Jam, and this is not surprising from Pearl Jam. They certainly are back in form, that's for sure.
That's pretty crisp.
Yeah, it really is. What do you think of this one, Vic?
Well, I think that's the problem, Mark. They're back in form. now, I have to say, I know Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam are friends of mine, you know. And this is a typical Pearl Jam record. Not a great one. And my problem with it is not the lyrics, is that this band started off back with, you know, their original albums, incredibly creative. They were not a classic rock band.
Right.
I mean, their songs were written, the guitar pieces were written by listening to rap music and coming up with a whole different way of doing things. When Eddie kind of took over, which he did, and I love Eddie, and he's got one of the great voices, to him, I think he fell victim to the punk orthodoxy thing, which is, in 1976, punk was about real freedom, in the same way that the Dixie Chicks now carries that vibe of real freedom. 20 or 30 years later, it became a set of limiting rules for some people.
Yeah, I get
like,
it,
we
I get
have
it.
To sound crappy, you know, use a lesser studio, and bash out the same three chords.
They fell victim to that.
Musically, they could do so much more. I wish they had taken a bit of a leap.
All right, now let's move on to Bruce Springsteen. I'm just going to tell you ahead of time, I love this record. I don't know what you're going to say about it, and I'm not a huge Bruce fan, but I think musically and also the way he put the Bruce drive shaft into what are not essentially anti-war songs, but populist folk music, populist protest music. I like it. Let's hear a little bit. I just think that, you know, I grew up with a little of this music because my father was a Pete Seeger fan, and I didn't think that somebody could reinvent these songs again, and I thought he did a very good job at it.
Well, that's just because you're a commie, you know? A commie, simp, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
What do we do with you people? Turn you over to the Dixie Chicks. I agree. As a matter of fact, my first listen to this, I was kind of disappointed, and I thought, what's he doing here? And then I realized the thing about Bruce is he has two normal voices. One, the anthemic voice that's very genuine that you hear on Born in the USA.
Yeah,
and
earnest.
All that. And the other is that intimate voice that he uses on things like, I think he brought to perfection on Devils and Dust and things like that.
Sure.
But then he's got this third voice that he never talks about, which is kind of the slightly wacko voice of basically saying, okay, I'm not, these songs I can't put into my normal two categories, so I'm just going to, you know, let's have a laugh along with me on this, and yet I mean it 100%. And what he did, which you touched on, was he took songs that were considered, you know, not when Pete Seeger was singing them, they were very alive then, but now they're kind of musty, old, reverential folk songs, and he flipped them, and with this incredible half Dixieland, you know, whatever band, he's turned them into joyful statements rather than kind of mournful pieces. And it is incredibly addictive, and I understand he's going to tour with this band.
Oh, great.
And if he does, don't miss it, and you're right about the album. And if you listen to it the first time and you don't get it, just play it again.
All right, Vic, you know, you did a great job at this. It was great talking to you, and I love your enthusiasm, and I agree with everything you said. I got to go buy the Dixie Chicks record. Thanks for let's do this again, can we?
Yes, I would love to. And by the way, for anybody that doesn't have the Dixie Chicks album and has AOL, you can listen to the whole album in advance.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Vic Garbarini. Take care.
You too, Mark.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back with Ngaio a little bit more and Woo-hoo! Some short order news. And oh, wait, we got a shark. I think I got a shark attack coming on. Hang out.
Now, I've got squirrels in my backyard. Mark Maron.
I think you can say your pants. All right, I've been having some email battles.
He
with
meant
some
the
people.
Backyard of his pants.
Oh, I see.
All right.
What? I'm not even going to make a nut joke. All right. Let's do some emails here. Here's one from Ted in Nebraska. Hi, Mark. Once again, the Democrats are totally wrong. They have no values whatsoever. Oh man, it's happening. Oh my God.
And now, from Radio Halliburton, it's America's favorite late-night far-right radio show, Shark and Awe, with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good evening, neocons! Radio Halliburton, where the truth hurts. Now, Mark the Shark loves women. Whoa, down, little mud shark. And Mark the Shark's not some sweet cheeks who wants to marry his boyfriend. But I gotta tell you, women are making me crazy lately. Like Madonna.
Boring.
Did you see that picture of her crucified on a disco cross? She thinks she's Jesus now? A short, old, ugly Jesus who can't sing or dance and has oozing herpes sores? That's Madonna for you. Like vermin. Sounds like you need a hit, Madonna. There you go. Number one with a bullet. Stick that up your breathless Mahoney, Dick Tracy. Let's read an email. Dear Mark the Shark, Dixie Chicks suck. Love, Ricky. Good point, Ricky. Hey, Dixie Chicks, so you're ashamed of our president? The only bush you should be embarrassed by is your own hippie trouser jungle. Get it? Lay off the donuts, Natalie Maines. Dixie Chunks is more like it. Sing, Natalie. Now all you girls, let's harmonize.
Oh, I'm the Dixie Chicks. We don't respect the president because no one spanked us when we were little girls.
Hey, now, little hammerhead, take it easy. And did you hear about Joan Baez? She was up in a tree singing at some rally for illegal immigrants, like some old squirrel looking for some stray nuts. What I wouldn't do for a silver dagger right now.
Ah! Reep, 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 reep.
Hello, Joan? You have a phone call. It's 1962 calling. It says, come back. All is forgiven. Get it? She's old. I don't want to say Joan Baez is an old bat, but I think she'll be hanging upside down in that tree pretty soon. Hope it doesn't get drafty up there, Joni. You'll be blowing in the wind. Get it? Blowing in the wind? She sucks, people.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Oh. Why am I in the four?
Mark, you all right?
I don't know. What the hell is Ngaio doing here? Well, hey, you guys. Here's Auntie M, and everybody's here. What happened?
Hey, yeah. Ngaio, resuscitate him.
Yeah,
did I have one of those things? Did I do it?
I think you had a flashback.
Oh, man, I hate when that happens. Did I say anything bad? Well, we got to do this, and then let me do this, and then you plug your gigs, and we'll have you back again next week sometime.
Next week sometime?
Here's the second edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. At a White House news conference with Tony Blair yesterday, President Bush admitted for the first time he made mistakes in the Iraq War. Bush said he should never have said bring it on, and that he should have used more moderate language like you go girl or talk to the hand and please put more landmines in the roads in order to endanger the lives of soldiers that have not provided adequate body armor for something like that. All right. A report released by the Union of Conserved Scientists in Berkeley found that the nation's 505,000 old school buses. Wow. Wow! Are some of the oldest and dirtiest vehicles on the road. The levels of soot inside the buses are so high, black kids who were bused into white schools turned out to be white! Nothing from the black
All that
guy.
Work for that?
Under former administrator Christine Todd Whitman, the EPA created a program to upgrade all school buses by 2010, despite objections of President Bush, who says there's no proof yet that diesel fumes are caused by man. All right. A new study found that one-third of the nation's youngest children live in homes where the TV is on most of the time. Parents are advised to talk to their children and tell them to turn off the TV and go outside and play with their wireless laptop. That's it. Where are you this weekend?
Nowhere.
Come on. You said you got a gig?
I do have a gig in 2 weeks in Monterey at the Planet Gemini.
All right. Go to Ngayo Bilom. Is there a MySpace for people that smoke pot with Ngayo Bilom?
Yeah, that's, I've smoked weed with Ngayo. That's okay. The name of the group. MySpace.com. NGAIO.
I got a link to it at markmaron.com. Have a great Memorial Day. Next week, we're going to have fun. Memorial Day, I think there's going to be a comedy show, right? All right. That's all right. Jim, you okay?
I had ice cream with Jim Earl on MySpace. Look it up. Yeah. I love ice cream.
It's a euphemism.
Oh, good night, sheeple. I wish I could smoke pot.